Welcome to the Contact Center Expert Show. This show is hosted by Nancy Monroe, CEO of Verbal Transactions, a voice enablement technology company. Join our discussion on how you can make your contact center a well-oiled machine.
All right. Well, welcome, everyone. Welcome to our studio. and we're glad everyone's sitting safely apart. We all have masks on, trust me. All right, calm down. Okay. Well, I know why they're excited. They're excited because of our guest today who has quite the pedigree. Thomas Cardello has been an entrepreneur for 30 years, and having launched and sold two previous companies, his first company, Access Direct, founded in 1995, grew to 2,200 employees in 5 years, and sold to Interactive Corp, AIC, in the year 2000. Access Direct was number 8 on the Inc. 500 list in 2000, and Tom Cardello was the EY Regional Winner in 1998. After selling Access Direct, Tom went to run one of the Interactive Corp companies with 15,000 employees around the world. Tom reported directly to Barry Diller, AIC's chairman, and Tom decided to resign his position in 2003, and after setting out on his non-compete, founded TLC Associates in 2007. While Tom is the only investor in TLC Associates, he did issue over 33% of the company's stock to the initial management team and other employees. That's amazing. TLC Associates operates BPO centers in 7 communities in the U.S. and also partners with firms in India, the Dominican Republic, and the Philippines. The company employs around 3,500 team members globally, serving clients such as John Deere, Anderson Windows and Doors, Time Warner, and J. Crew and Dow Jones. And in addition to that, if you're not already exhausted from all things Tom has done, he's also purchased his parents' mechanical engineering company after his parents had passed and continues to run R.W. Cardella, Inc. in conjunction with his sister. This provides heavy industrial mechanical contracting services to large industrial companies such as DuPont, Champion Spark Plug, Hormel, U.S. Gypsum, and others. He's also actively involved as an adjunct professor at the University of Iowa, go Hawkeyes, College of Business, and Tom also actively supports and is involved with charitable organizations such as Ronald McDonald House, Special Olympics, Big Brothers and Big Sisters, and other organizations. Woof! So welcome, Tom.
Thank you for having me.
So, with your great level of expertise and all of your experiences, what would you say out of any of the businesses that you've been running, what's been the greatest kind of experience that you've had?
I think the greatest experience is we go into smaller communities across the country, rural communities, higher unemployment rates, and We are established there for not just years, but decades. We've been in, Keokuk, Iowa for 20 years, Marshalltown, Iowa, 23 years, and the list goes on and on.
Yeah.
And we have people in these communities that have been with us the entire time between my first company and the second company.
Wow.
But what's really special is, a lot of these folks they come up through the organization and they continue to take on additional responsibility. We have people in our rural communities that perhaps started on the phone. And if we weren't in town, they probably would be working at Walmart or the hardware store. But we have people in these rural communities now that are dealing on a daily basis with our Fortune 500 clients and executing, what the client needs to have done in these communities. So we don't have to necessarily put our corporate management team in, a large community because we find that we have very talented and motivated folks in smaller communities. And I don't think a lot of our competitors, I don't believe a lot of our competitors could achieve that same business model.
And that's an excellent point. I mean, I myself grew up in Iowa on a dairy farm, and, I would have jobs that would take me to different coasts, and when they found out, you're from the Midwest, people was like, oh, wow, you'd be really attractive out here because of your work ethic. And just, those small towns are much more appreciative of those opportunities, and you know, don't take it for granted. You know, so there's a lot of rewards that come both in both directions, I would say, from organizations. Like you said, they've been there for years and years. They're longstanding. That means they're loyal. You know, because it's hard these days. You don't see the unions. You know, people used to have their union job for 30 years, or they're, you know, they get the gold watch or whatever. And you know, those jobs, just, you know, that mentality of staying somewhere for that length of time, you know, is rare these days. So that's great to hear that that's you know, get great byproduct of what you've produced.
Yeah, you know, the other thing is, when you're in these communities, we're making ourselves a part of the community. We're sponsoring little league teams, and you know, mm-hmm. we're in the high schools helping sponsorships. We're involved in charitable organizations, and we really like to become ingrained in the community, because
yeah.
you can't go into a community with 10,000 people or 12,000 people and be there for 25 years if you're not A, involved in the community, and B, taking care of your folks. Because,
mm-hmm.
you know,
mm-hmm.
in our industry, we're known for companies going into large cities and churning through the workforce in 5 years, and then
yeah.
bailing out of that city and going to the next city. And that's
yep.
just not our business model.
Yeah. You know, and I think with COVID now, what we're seeing is that a lot of contact centers are saying, oh, well, this widens our pool. We can go out and hire people that are working from home. But to your point, you're still not becoming a presence in that individual's community. You know, they might hire one or two people from, you know, maybe the same town, but you're not able to, you know, make an impact on the community that way. So I still think you have a very good competitive advantage in that regard as well.
Yeah, I mean, we still have a work-at-home model. We have several
mm-hmm.
hundred people working from home. But our model's slightly different. You know, most of our work-at-home agents started in the brick-and-mortar environment, and then we transitioned them to a work-at-home environment, especially in this, you know, this day and age of social distancing and, you
mm-hmm.
know, not having our centers at more than 50% capacity, things of that nature.
Yeah, do you see that you'll eventually bring everybody back, or are you going to keep it maybe in a more hybrid model?
There would definitely be a hybrid model, and one of the nice things about that is, you know, at some point this COVID pandemic will wane, you know, whether it's through immunity or a vaccine or whatever the case may be.
Mm-hmm.
And at that point, if we have, you know, 50% brick-and-mortar capacity and 50% people at home, you know, once we are able to then turn around and fill our brick-and-mortar capacity, we'll still keep the work-at-home model in
yeah.
place.
Yeah.
So it allows us to actually increase capacity without additional fixed expense cost.
Yeah. Yeah, I know that's smart, because, you know, I've been sitting in on a lot of webinars and a lot of, you know, virtual conferences for contact centers. There's a couple that have been going on this week, and it seems to be the consensus that, you know, either A, they're just going to keep everybody at home, or allow those that, you know, really which prefer to work in an office come to the office. You know, from a technology standpoint, it seems like everybody was able to move remotely pretty fast. Was that your experience as well?
Well, we had to move, you know, several hundred people quickly, and it's not quite as simple as just, you know, moving equipment. You have to make sure individuals
mm-hmm.
have a certain amount of bandwidth, because you're dealing with vast amount of information, right? It's just not a Zoom call
yeah.
or, you know, some sort
right.
of virtual call. I mean, we're moving, you know, vast amount of encrypted data back and forth between PCs and servers and clients' places of business, et cetera. So it's a little more complex, but we were able to handle it. You know, the other thing about this work-at-home model, when you're in a rural community, you know, the individuals that we employ, their work is an extension of their life, if you will. You
mm-hmm.
know, they're working with their friends and neighbors. These are the same people they see at church or in the grocery store. Their
yeah,
kids
yeah.
go to school together, et cetera. And the workplace is a social environment for them. You know, they like being in the physical brick and mortar center, because we do things such as, you know, food trucks and birthday parties, and you know, these are their friends and neighbors, and so it's a little different environment when you're working from home, you know, after being used to a brick and mortar environment in a smaller community versus a much larger community.
Yeah, no, that's a good point. Now, from a business operations, you know, has there been any challenges that, you know, really kind of forced you to reduce or do something completely different or restructure something in a different way that you never would have thought of doing had COVID not forced you into it?
Well, it's been interesting for us. We have expanded incredibly rapidly the past few months. We've signed 13 major new clients, many of the brand names you would identify immediately.
Sure.
We had requests from middle of March to early September to add 600 people to current clients' accounts. We were able to handle about half of that.
Wow.
And now as we look into next year, we're expanding in the state of Georgia. We've just signed a lease agreement to go into Sumter County, Georgia, the community of Americus, Georgia. We believe that we'll be able to employ 1,000 people in that region, and we have the work sold to do so.
Wow. Wow.
And that site will come online December 1st. You mentioned earlier that we were doing partnerships in the Dominican Republic. That is true, but we just signed a lease to open our own location with 230 folks in the Dominican Republic while still maintaining the partnership we have there in both Santiago and Santo Domingo. And we're expanding Marshalltown, Iowa, as well. So we need to go from approximately 3,500 employees today to 4,500 employees by no later than the end of first quarter 2021, and hopefully sooner than that.
That is awesome. Now, is it because you feel that the clients that are hiring you see that more people are doing more online shopping or more remote shopping? Is that what's been kind of the driving factor behind that, do you think?
The biggest driving factor is our culture as an organization. We're a closely held company. We have no outside influence whatsoever. We have no outside investment groups. We have no outside stockholders. We have two groups of individuals to keep happy, our employees and our clients, and it's in that order. If we keep our employees happy, they stay with us forever. They become subject matter experts on our clients' business. Clients get to know them by name, and they see the same people on their program year over year, and that drives a better return on investment for our clients.
Mm-hmm.
So that's the main driving force of our business model, is how we conduct our business and the culture of the culture inside of our organization.
I wish more contact centers could, you know, hear this, and, you know, those listening that are listening, pay attention to this, because that is such a huge, huge intangible asset that creates tangible assets for the organization. You know, and I was in the last podcast show I did, you were talking about how, you know, contact center agents are the closest people to the customer. And
that's right.
When you're, yeah, so if you're a, like, say, Pepsi-Cola, and you're in Pepsi-Cola's contact center, the senior executives don't see it that way for the most part, you know, or just using them as an example, but which is completely unfair, you know. And you've got this new term of CX, professional customer experience. So I, you know, a lot of times I'll reach out to them to try to get them to adopt our simulation technology platform. Because the better trained and quicker you can get up to speed, the better the customer experience is going to be, right? So I'll contact somebody with that title, and they'll say, "Oh, well, I don't deal with that. You know, we deal with it." And I say, "Well, why aren't you dealing with that?" That is a huge part of what happens in the chain of, you know, acquiring your product, using your product, whatever. That at some point in time, they're going to be reaching out to someone within one of your channels for support or giving you feedback, or you're asking them to provide you feedback. And, you know, so that's been a frustration of mine, is that, you know, that side of the house gets so underappreciated many times.
Yeah, you know, it's typically viewed, as you put, it's typically viewed as an expense. And we have modeling that we do where we can go into a major organization, a Fortune 500 company, and show them that this is not an expense. It's actually a positive return on the investment. And it's pretty proprietary how we go in and can demonstrate this to clients. But, you know, it does give the individuals, our day-to-day contacts, the ammunition that they need to their senior executive team to show how beneficial spending X dollars on the customer experience can be to the overall bottom line of a major corporation.
Yeah. I mean, it's, you know, I just sent out an email yesterday saying, you know, we all learn from our mistakes, right? And that's a great way to learn something. But, you know, don't practice on customers. You know, so if you have a way of, you know, letting people make mistakes and learning from that in a safe way, let's do that. Because guess what? All the time when I'm, you know, talking to people about different types of, you know, how do you train your employees? You know, it's a week or two in the classroom and then maybe nesting, or, you know, they shadow somebody and then boom, they're on the phone. And I said, well, how do they really learn how to do a transaction? How do they interact with your customers? And they're like, well, they kind of practice on the customers, to be honest with you. So, you know, and when you start to put dollars and cents to that, like you probably have some kind of formula that you're using then. You know, I used to do this with inside salespeople. I said, you know, if you get a hold of one, you know, within an hour, how many contacts are you making within an hour? And how many of those convert to a sale, and do the math? You know, so if somebody isn't prepared to handle that conversation correctly, you just lost X number of dollars every time you have that point of contact. And so I'm sure it's the same for the different types of contact center clients that you deal with. You know, you just got to figure out what that formula is to prove to them the ROI on that experience. You know, so have you come up with some, is it the same formula, or do you use different formulas based upon the type of industry that you're working with?
Well, I mean, you know, the basics are the same for the most part. But, you know, you mentioned something that's really critical. And that is, in our company, we allow our operation to run our operation. Mm-hmm. In many of our competitors' companies, especially those that are publicly traded or have to meet a quarterly spreadsheet number to an investment firm, they allow their finance department to run their operation. And what I mean by that is, you know, they may be halfway through a quarter and the finance department will come and say, you know, we're behind on our bottom line. You know, yes, we're supposed to give individuals, you know, X number of days training, but we need you to cut that back by 2 days and get them on the phone, things of that nature. And so what happens is, you know, they're penny wise, but pound foolish, if you will, because what happens is you're short changing the individual that's going onto the phone, whether you're reducing the amount of training time or increasing the supervisor ratios. So instead of one supervisor to every 12 people, you now have one to every 20. And so the folks on the phone are not getting the education they need. They're certainly not feeling appreciated. And so the churn rate, the attrition rate, you know, is up to 300% a year with many companies because they allow the finance department to run their operation. When you allow your operation to run your operation, then all those things can be handled. And when I say all those things, you know, education, motivation, celebration, things of that nature are handled in the front line. And if you're spending a few more bucks, you actually make it up in the long run through not having 300% of your attrition rates.
No, that, you know, Tom, that's an excellent point, because I just see it over and over and over again where it's, you just got to, you know, turn the screws this way or do this, you know, and the contact center agent is, as someone used to say, has more thermometers up there, you know what, to measure them than anybody else in the organization. Like every single waking moment that they're on the phone, you know, even just to leave, just take a 15-minute break, you know, that's being clocked, and that's being, you know, all these measurements and metrics that are just exhausting when you think about it. Any other role in the organization that's, you know, monitored and tracked as much as a contact center, and the fact that they're only making, you know, what, 12 to 18 bucks an hour on top of all of that, you know, it's got to be very frustrating for those individuals. So I applaud you for the way that you are running your operations, because it's rare. I have to tell you, I mean, it is rare to have employees that stay on board that length of time, but also, you know, if people could see the benefits of decreasing that turnover and making these extra efforts. I think the operations people actually would like to make them, and to your point, you know, there's pressure from above, you know, to make, you know, a dime more an hour, or cut a dime out of the expense an hour, or whatever it is. But you're right, it's a pound foolish, and I think you should go out on the road and start, you know, hosting seminars on this process, because it's fantastic to hear this.
Yeah, I mean, don't get me wrong. Do we have our opportunity areas? Of course. You know, any people business has opportunity areas. And, you know, we certainly have to measure our ratios and our gross profit margins as well. But I don't want that to be the driving factor in the company, because it doesn't benefit us. It doesn't benefit us. It doesn't benefit our clients. And it certainly doesn't benefit the client's customer. But, you know, that's not to say that you know, we certainly have our opportunity areas because we are a people-based business.
Mm-hmm. Now, as far as the way that you're running the business, do you see, you know, there's a lot of buzz around automation. There's a lot of buzz around AI tied into automation or multi-channel. You know, where do you see, you know, that you envision you'll be making some changes from a technology side of the business?
You know, one of the areas that I'm constantly told I should be very careful about speaking to is technology. So I have to be careful.
Okay.
You know, I know what I do well, and I know what I don't do well because I'm told I don't do it well.
Okay.
You know, my second command, Tom Maroney, would be an excellent person to have a follow-up podcast on, because he has his finger on the pulse of the question you just answered.
Okay.
Some of the things you mentioned, we certainly need to look to do in the future. You know, our 3-year to 5-year growth initiatives, you know, are not necessarily centered around more brick and mortar business process outsourcing services. You know, there has to be additional products that we can offer to our clients. You know, we certainly need to diversify our product offering, whether we build that ourselves or whether we go buy a company that's smaller but does something extraordinarily well. And, you know, those are the conversations we're having now. It's, you know, as you might expect, it's certainly conversations we were having at the start of the year, but we all got sidetracked along the way.
Yeah. Yes, we did. You know, it's been an interesting ride because, you know, people have adapted. They've made accommodations. I think we've all, both personally and business-wise, and I think, you know, at first everybody was just, you know, let's do this. We're going to get through this, because we kind of thought it would be short-term. Well, now that it's looking like it's definitely going to be, you know, obviously more long-term, probably at least until summer of next year, before there's either a vaccine or some other activity that will modify this experience, you know. But what would you say is something that you wish you were still doing if COVID wasn't around, either just personally or business-wise?
Yeah, nothing in my mind, nothing replaces a good old-fashioned face-to-face meeting with handshakes and lunch. And interacting with clients or peers around a conference table. There's just something about the creative energy in those sort of endeavors that I just don't think you can replace on a conference call.
You're absolutely right.
Yeah, that's one of that's the main thing I like to get back.
Yeah, I was talking to one of our clients that we were building simulations for, and we were talking about theater because I'm a musician as well, and my adult children are involved in a theater that hasn't been able to function in Aurora, Illinois for a while, so it's been very disappointing. But we talked about how the energy that you get off of each other during those experiences, so even in the workplace, you know, the energy that the vibe that's, you know, at the conference table and the personalities that are more spontaneous, you know, spontaneous experiences are much harder to do in a virtual environment. And so, you know, I think that's like to your point, it's like, I think we miss the spontaneity of being able to read body language and cues and just bouncing things off of each other. You know, it's much easier to do in that face-to-face environment.
Absolutely.
Yeah, yeah. No, it's well, for my, you know, as we wrap things up here, you know, being in Iowa and being in the Midwest, you know, do you have any contact centers that are outside the Midwest, and do you see any differences in the people that work in those operations?
Yeah, so we have locations in New Mexico. We have locations mm-hmm. in Texas, and as I mentioned, we're headed to Georgia as well. But,
yeah.
You know, universally, treating people well, there's no replacement for that. And
mm-hmm.
if you can
mm-hmm.
go into community and demonstrate that, people will begin to gravitate towards that organization. When we were expanding rapidly in El Paso, Texas, Alamogordo, New Mexico, and Las Cruces, New Mexico, I literally moved to El Paso, New Mexico in November of 2017. I took a small one-bedroom apartment right off Interstate 10, and I stayed there for 6 months.
Wow.
Because I wanted
wow.
the culture of the organization to permeate what we now
mm-hmm.
What we now call the Southwest region, right? We have the Midwest region with four locations
yep.
in Iowa, Southwest region with the locations in New Mexico and Texas, and now our Southeast region, which will comprise our employees in Florida and South Carolina, as well as a major effort in Georgia. You know, so the business model stays the same, and that's just taking
yeah.
care of folks.
Yeah. Yep. You know, and it's so simple, you know, it doesn't have to be, oh, we're bringing in ping pong tables and, you know, snack bars and chefs, you know, like out in Silicon Valley, you know, to, you know, entice people. You're right. Just treating people decent, showing that you appreciate them, recognizing and allowing them to have a say in their job and how things are done, that costs you nothing. You know, kindness is free, as they say. And
exactly.
I think it's a great, yeah, I think it's a great business model. And I think you need to write a book on leadership because, you know, what you're saying today and the examples that you're sharing with us today, I mean, kindness, you know, some title it something like kindness helps with the bottom line, you know, kindness is profitability or something like that, because it is. It's really that simple. I mean, you can't certainly ignore some of the levers that you pull to run business operations, but being good to people, that's priceless, but it costs you nothing. So I appreciate
no, you're
right. being with us today and sharing your knowledge with us, and I'm serious, you should definitely write a leadership book out there. I think our audience
sounds good.
Our audience agrees with me.
Very good. Well, thank you for having me on the show.
Yes, well, thank you, and we'll have to have your other colleague on sometime as well.
Please send me an email, and I'll get you two connected.
Awesome. All right. Well, thanks a lot, Tom.